Yuma County's primary election, and a new birthing center opens in South County. This is Arizona Edition. I'm Carmen Marquez. We now have some clarity on who won in last month's primary election and who is moving on to the November ballot. It has been a contentious election cycle at times.
It didn't seem like anybody wanted to engage on the actual issues that were addressing the hardworking families here in Yuma.
And the new Vida Birthing Center opens this month in San Luis. Nurse Alexis Marquez mentioned what sets the center apart.
It's different because birthing center is going to be only natural births, no epidurals.
Those stories, plus a local vigil for ICE victims and Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs visits Yuma. Coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is Arizona Edition. I'm Carmen Marquez. We're a little more than 1 week past the primary election in Arizona, and we have a little more clarity on which candidates will move on to the November ballot. KAWC's Victor Calderon has more information on election results.
Democratic Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs is running for re-election unopposed. She will face the Republican who political experts predicted would win the Republican nomination. Trump-endorsed Congressman Andy Biggs. Already the two sides are on the attack. In Yuma, some Democratic leaders spoke to reporters this past Monday. They say Congressman Biggs' voting record is raising costs for Arizonans. Arizona Democratic Party Chair Charlene Fernandez.
Because of Andy Biggs, diesel prices hit an all-time high, driving up shipping costs, supply chain costs, and the price of food across the nation. His tariff agenda is threatening agriculture exports and putting 7,500 Arizona agriculture jobs directly at risk, threatening the livelihoods of our local workers and our local growers.
In a statement to KAWC, Drew Sexton, a senior advisor with the Biggs for Arizona campaign, said, quote, Katie Hobbs, who remains under criminal investigation for a corruption scandal, has spent her entire career trying to raise taxes on Arizona families and businesses. From her push to double the state gas tax to vetoing the no tax on tips and overtime bill three different times, she's done nothing but make life more expensive for Arizonans. Voters know Andy Biggs has worked for pro-growth tax reform in his time as Senate president and in Congress, and they're ready to see him eliminate the state income tax as their next governor. End quote. We'll continue to cover this race and others on KAWC. In Yuma, if you made it on the ballot, you won. There was one write-in candidate for mayor and two for council, but they were not able to defeat those on the ballot. Yuma Mayor Doug Nichols won a fourth term with a big win over write-in challenger Carlos Adams. For the Yuma City Council, incumbent councilmember Carol Smith won, followed by Henry Valenzuela and Ron Van Wy. Valenzuela spoke about how the campaign was contentious.
Throughout the campaign, I tried to stay away from the negativity and focus on issues. So that's why I talked about Kennedy Pool. You know, that's why I talked about other specific issues like why we don't need to be funding the spaceport. And I would talk about those things intentionally in hopes that other candidates would also either take the same or an opposite position. And then we could talk about that. But it didn't seem like anybody wanted to engage on the actual issues that were addressing the hardworking families here in Yuma, like Kennedy Pool, like the spaceport, like the Innovation Hub.
Among the local state legislative races, the Democratic primary for the House in District 23 appears to be the most competitive. LD 23 includes part of Yuma County. Incumbent Representative Mariana Sandoval will seek re-election in November. She'll be joined by Emilia Cortez. They'll face Republican incumbent Representative Michelle Pena and Gary Garcia Snyder in the general election. Voters will choose no more than two candidates. Somerton Mayor Jerry Anaya won re-election. He'll be joined on that city's council by Jose Pepe Moreno. The remaining two seats will be decided in November between incumbents Juan Castillo and Lorena Delgadillo and challengers Victor Lozano and Brian Lopez. In San Luis, the mayor's race in November will be between former councilman Matias Rosales and challenger James Allen Jr. On the council, Eric Lusania, who organizes youth programs for Campesinos Sin Fronteras, received the most votes and has won a seat. Two council seats will be up for grabs in November between incumbent councilmen Javier Vargas, Tavio Ramirez, Ruben Walsh, and Luisa Arriola. Current Mayor Nieves Riedel, who ran for a council seat, did not receive enough votes to move to November. Stay tuned to KAWC for continuing election coverage from Yuma and La Paz counties and Arizona through and after Election Day. For KAWC News, I'm Victor Calderon.
From KAWC News, I'm Cisco Stargazer. And right now, I'm actually here to share a little bit from the KAWC Student Newsroom. Our students just spent 8 intensive weeks learning the basics of news writing and producing for AIR. This summer, our cohort consisted of 7 students, and the majority of them came into this program never having taken a journalism course. Now, as their professional mentor, I can say they still have a little ways to go, but they've come so far. This summer, the students focused on the primary election, so we're going to share 2 of their final projects today. First up, we'll hear from Melanie Ruiz Lopez.
In the United States, older generations demonstrate higher levels of electoral participation compared to younger generations. According to a report from the U.S. Census Bureau, generational differences in voter turnout remain significant. In 2024, 74.7% of voters ages 65 and older cast a ballot, compared to only 47.7% of voters between the ages 18 and 24. This pattern is still visible. On Tuesday, July 21st, Arizona Western College served as a polling location for the Yuma primary election. Many people came out to vote, most of them older adults. One of them was Dr. Shadi Kalani, where he expressed why he thinks younger people should be more involved.
The data generally says that the older generation are more involved in voting, but I think for the younger generation, just by doing the math and the statistics, you're more likely to get impacted by the changes. So it's a good opportunity for you to be involved in those changes, and especially that it's going to impact you for years and years to come.
Karen Davila, Executive Administrative Assistant at Arizona Western College, also spoke on the importance of voting.
I think social media has a lot to do with it. The older generations, they fought very hard to be able to vote, especially the women. So I think they take great pride in that, and being able to vote is a big thing for them. And I think younger people should take that upon themselves to realize what a great thing it is that you are able to vote.
With a different perspective, Anna Bork, a younger voter from the KAWC Student Newsroom, shared her thoughts on voting accessibility.
I think it's more accessible to the older generations because they've done it before. They know how it works, and they have that experience where they know to be punctual with the deadlines for registration. They know that they need to, you know, drive down to the polling station, or they need to mail in their ballots on time. Whereas I think the younger generation as a whole tends to lack punctuality, where if you don't know the registration deadline is coming, then you're going to miss it. And if you miss it, you can't vote at all. But that's months prior in advance. You have to know that you need to register in advance. I think that we just don't teach the voting process very well.
For many older adults, voting can be simple. For younger generations, it can be something they're still learning to navigate. These different experiences show why turnout continues to vary across generations, with habits and perspectives shaping how each group approaches the polls. From the KAWC Student Newsroom, I'm Melanie Ruiz Lopez.
You might recall Melanie from her podcast, Siendo Primero, but she's newer to journalism, and she's grown so much as a writer. We're so excited for her. Next up, we have Romel Villa, who we're also really proud of. Romel is only just entering his senior year of high school, and he's already producing work like what you're about to hear.
San Luis locals gathered at the public library for this year's primaries. Signs advertising every party wrapped around the parking lot and extended onto the sidewalk of the neighboring Ed Pastor Elementary. Voters came in waves, once in the morning, followed by a midday rush, and the final lot coming in the afternoon. One of those voters was local Alondra Moreno. She explains one of her biggest concerns is the lack of practical methods of voting outside the conventional in-person practice.
The main concerns right now, I will say that, is the inconvenience to came here to have to be in person. And for San Luis specifically, we don't have mailboxes, so that makes the process even worse. For young people, that's one of the changes I want to see. I want to see more younger people voting, and for that, I think we need mailboxes.
Fellow San Luis resident Lizeth Munoz explains that she feels San Luis isn't being treated as the larger city that it is, and that the city needs more jobs to allow for its continued growth.
Creo que no se planeó el crecimiento de la ciudad. Siempre se vio como una ciudad de paso, por así decirlo. Pero creo que ya no es el caso de San Luis. Creo que impactaría en todos los sentidos que hubiera más trabajo.
With locals sharing their biggest concerns, volunteer Luis Cabrera shares his message of action.
I want to say that your vote makes a difference. There's elections that happen one by one vote, three votes locally here. We had a county election won by three votes. So every vote makes a difference. So people come, vote, make your rights heard, and make your voices heard.
The next election will be held on November 3rd of this year. From the KAWC Student Newsroom, I'm Romel Villa.
With Arizona's primary election over, the race for governor is set. Democratic incumbent Katie Hobbs will face Republican challenger Andy Biggs in November. Hobbs recently visited Yuma to open a local campaign office. But first, she stopped at Chili Pepper to hear from business owners. It was quiet in the Chili Pepper kitchen Thursday afternoon, July 23rd, but it wasn't empty. In fact, it was crowded as staff members, media, and restaurateurs watched Governor Katie Hobbs prepare tortilla. Sitting down with the Gutierrez family who founded the restaurant, Hobbs shared a meal and heard their perspectives as small business owners.
We talked about how Washington's policies are really hurting small businesses. They're being hit really hard with their food supply because of tariffs, and they're having to make hard decisions as an employer. They employ 170 people here in Yuma, and it's affecting their customers. They've had to raise their prices. They're seeing that in the customer base, and it's a challenge.
Hobbs used those concerns to pivot to the governor's race and her Republican opponent.
That's really the contrast in this election. My opponent is someone who continues to support Washington's cost-hiking agenda, including tariffs that are raising costs everywhere for Arizonans.
Hobbs also used the stop to preview an education debate likely to shape the November election, the future of empowerment scholarship accounts, or ESAs, Arizona School Voucher Program. At the time of her visit, four major education measures were expected on the November ballot. Judges have since ordered two of them removed, although the ruling involving Proposition 145 is being appealed. But let's recap a little bit. Prop 212 would generally limit ESA eligibility to families earning $150,000 or less. It also prohibits luxury and non-educational purchases and add requirements for tutors in participating schools. Prop 145 would protect certain ESA savings for military families. The finalized ballot language also says it would nullify Prop 212 if both measures passed. Hobbs has proposed reforms to the ESA program each year, but she said Arizona Republicans have been unwilling to put any kind of accountability in place.
As a result, we're seeing all kinds of waste, fraud, and abuse taking place by people taking taxpayer dollars that are supposed to be used for educational purposes, buying jewelry, lingerie, amusement park trips in California, ski passes, and it's not helping kids get a better education.
Prior to 2022, students generally qualified for Arizona's ESA program if they had a disability or belonged to certain groups such as military families and foster children. In 2022, however, Arizona made the program universal. Hobbs has sought to scale it back since she took office in 2023.
At the end of the day, this is an entitlement program. There is no other entitlement program that we don't have any kind of eligibility requirements for. And we need to make sure that every student across the state is having opportunity for a good education. That is not happening with the way the program is working right now.
Two other proposals address schools more broadly. Prop 143 would have restricted collective bargaining by public employee unions and certain union activity in school districts, but a judge has since ordered it off the ballot. Prop 320, which remains headed to voters, would require some districts to spend at least 60% of their operational funding on direct instruction or face funding reductions. Hobbs framed those ballot fights as part of a broader struggle over investment in public education.
I think we're seeing the ESA program expanded the way it has because it's a direct attack on public education. I think that's number one. And the legislature continues to put unfunded mandates on schools and tell teachers how they can teach and make decisions at the state level that should be made at the local level. So we need to rein in the ESAs like we just talked about, but also Prop 123, which expires last year. We had a chance to send a renewal to the voters to put billions of dollars back in our classrooms without raising taxes. That's still going to be a priority, but politics got in the way of doing that this year.
The divide extends beyond education. Asked about her frequent use of the veto pen, Hobbs defended her record.
I think a lot of this is just political distraction from the fact that when I veto a bill, it's usually because it's not focused on the real issues we're facing. I'm really proud of the fact that I've signed nearly 1,000 pieces of bipartisan legislation into law, far more than the number that I vetoed. And when folks are focused on playing political games, sometimes they keep sending me the same bills over and over again, knowing that I'll veto them, not trying to work on them to come to real solutions. When I ran for governor and the way I've governed, I'm focused on working with anyone to solve real problems, to deliver for Arizonans. I've done that. But I also said, look, I'm going to be a backstop. I'm going to stop bills that take away people's rights, that attack our right to vote, reproductive freedom, things like that. And that's what I've done.
With the election approaching, Hobbs is taking her case, on education and otherwise, to voters this November. Reporting from Chili Pepper Kitchen in Yuma, I'm Cisco Stargazer, and this reporting supported by a grant from the Arizona Local News Foundation.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is Arizona Edition. I'm Carmen Marquez. A new chapter in Yuma County childbirth. The San Luis New Vida Birthing Center opens this month, already booking 11 soon-to-be mothers. The 4,000-square-foot home-like facility is set up for low-risk, natural births with family present and water birth options. Here's the story.
So as you come in, you can tell that the room has been decorated so that it's very family-oriented. We want to make it homey for the patient.
For KAWC News in San Luis, Arizona, I'm Carmen Marquez.
It's our birthing suite. It's a little bit bigger, same setting. The only difference is that we have the pool over here at the end for the water birds.
11 soon-to-be mothers are already on the roster to give birth this August at San Luis New Vida Birthing Center, the first facility of its kind in Yuma County. Amanda Aguirre, CEO of the Regional Center for Border Health, speaks about the prerequisites.
This is for pregnant women that are low risk. Anyone else that is not low risk, you know, unfortunately will not be able to deliver here because of the conditions or previous conditions that they might have during pregnancy. We can deliver a baby tomorrow. But delivering a baby in this environment, right, with the husband be there, family members, comfortable for the women, but la partera, you know, is part of the family, becomes part of the family. Such a environment that is conducive for the families to just, you know, enjoy the birth.
Nurse Alexis Marquez says the center will focus on natural births without epidurals.
It's different because birthing center is going to be only natural births, no epidurals. Hospital, we do have all this medication for pain. This birthing center, we're equipped with patient safety medications, safety first. So we, in case we have an emergency, we already have our crash cart set up for mother and for baby. But the main difference over here is going to be the pain medication. We're not going to have epidurals, but we do have other resources.
The 4,000-square-foot home-like facility includes on-call rooms for providers, four midwives, and a staff of obstetric clinicians. Lucy Murrieta, maternal and child outreach supervisor, says the center will offer education.
Because I think there is a lot of taboo out there that, you know, you have to have that epidural to be able to deliver. And that's not necessarily true because your body is made naturally to deliver naturally. If you think about your ancestors, you know, your grandma, your, you know, great-great-grandma, you know, they were all delivering naturally because your body is set for that. So I think it's just a lot of education that needs to take in place, and that's going to be my role as part of my maternal and child, you know, education part. And I think that in collaboration with all the nurses, with all the midwives, I think that there has to be that out there, you know, that education out there, because I do think that right now it's all about, well, I don't want to have any pain, but in reality is that you're still going to have that pain, but then at the long run, when you have it naturally, you have a more, you know, your preparation, it's better, you know? If
Dr. Michael Stevens, director of the Birthing Center, says the facility holds a state license and is awaiting national accreditation.
The big one will be the accreditation for the birth center, as well as credentialing with the insurance companies. And a lot less of the intimidation of a hospital, the medical staff being completely different. If they were, most of the patients are younger, they haven't had much hospital experience, they have more room here for family members to be with them.
City Council member Carol Smith called it an important step.
And like I said, you have to fall within certain categories to come here, but they have the background, they have all the knowledge that would say whether a mom could deliver here or not and give her that choice. But there is a specific difference. If you don't have to be in the hospital, if you're not high risk or you choose not to be, there is going to be a difference. And just knowing that you got to decide.
Reporting from San Luis, I'm Carmen Marquez for KAWC News. Last month, some Yuma County residents gathered to remember those killed in ICE operations around the country. KAWC's Victor Calderon shares more.
Juan Sebastian Guerrero.
Presente.
Lorenzo Salgado Araujo.
Presente.
Locals gathered in Yuma earlier this month for a community vigil for people killed by officers with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, nationwide since 2025. That was Araceli Aquino reading the names of the two men ICE officers killed in Texas and Maine, Lorenzo Salgado Araujo and Juan Duran Guerrero. She read more than 50 more names. While none of the reported cases appear to be in Yuma County, those who spoke at the vigil said all humans deserve dignity and a chance to go home to their loved ones. John Dummermuth of Yuma held a sign calling for justice for Lorenzo and Juan, as well as Renee Good and Alex Preddy, the two U.S. citizens killed by ICE officers in Minnesota in January.
Even if people are here illegally, that's not a death penalty case, and we need to treat people with dignity, with respect, and due process.
Dummermuth explains what brought him to the vigil.
Well, I'm just concerned about people whose rights are being ignored or trampled on and want to, you know, just stand in solidarity.
Dummermuth said that on a personal level, his wife is a naturalized U.S. citizen but was born in Mexico.
Sometimes she's afraid to leave the house because of what's going on, and I take that personally.
Aquino said that although the group of more than 50 people who gathered on the warm July evening gathered under what she called, quote, devastating circumstances, end quote, that it was powerful to come together.
This should not be happening. We should not have to gather to mourn lives lost under circumstances like these. We should not allow this reality to become something we accept as normal. That is why it is so important that we are here today to remember Lorenzo, Juan, and countless others who have lost their lives during ICE operations and detention, to demand justice for these victims and their families, and to remind one another that every person deserves dignity, humanity, and the chance to return home to their loved ones.
The Associated Press reported that dozens of Democratic U.S. senators and the independent senator from Maine pushed for more details from ICE about that agency's vetting practices for new agents and how officers conduct vehicle pursuits, even as they demanded that body cameras be swiftly rolled out to all officers. The AP reports the demands came in a letter spearheaded by Maine's independent Senator Angus King, was signed by 38 Democratic senators and sent to the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees ICE. The demands follow the two deadly shootings in which ICE officers shot and killed immigrants in Houston and Maine. Those shootings both involved ICE officers shooting at people who were in vehicles at the time. In the wake of the Maine shooting, Homeland Security temporarily stopped officers from conducting vehicle stops, except in specific situations, the AP reports. But just a day later, after fierce criticism from some MAGA supporters, the White House said that traffic stops should continue. Homeland Security said that it was adding new training in crowd control measures, high-risk vehicle stops, live fire exercises, and medical training in response to what they call coordinated attacks against their officers and ICE facilities. Organizers for the Yuma vigil remind residents that they can report ICE activity and that citizens and non-citizens have rights when it comes to speaking with ICE agents, answering questions, and denying permission to enter a residence or searching belongings. For KAWC News, I'm Victor Calderon.
Alex Peretti.
Presente.
Renee Nicole Good.
Presente.
Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to news@kawc.org. You can also connect with KAWC on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Past shows and podcast information is available online. Visit kawc.org for more information. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. And remember, you can take KAWC with you wherever you go with the KAWC app. Just search KAWC in your app store. Thanks for listening. I'm Carmen Marquez.